If you are a founder tuning into this custom executive briefing, you already know that whenever a new AI model drops, the internet just, well, it immediately floods with noise.
Oh, absolutely. It's just an endless parade of parameter counts and, you know, latency metrics.
Right. Benchmark scores that look like alphabet soup. But I mean, when you look at your engineering team, you aren't wishing for a microscopic bump in some benchmark.
No, you're staring down your burn rate.
Exactly. You're looking at your product roadmap, and you're probably losing sleep over that massive, terrifying, multi-service code-based migration you've been putting off for, what, 3 quarters? Because you simply don't have the human hours to pull it off.
Yeah, and that tension right there is really the defining characteristic of running a technical startup today. Mm. You desperately need velocity to outpace competitors, but you absolutely require reliability so you don't, you know, break your existing product.
Which historically, AI has kind of forced you to choose one or the other.
Right. You either move fast and break things, or you move slow and safe.
Well, today is Thursday, May 28, 2026, and Anthropic just released Claude Opus 4.8. We have their official release notes, the updated API docs, and the brand new manuals for Claude Code sitting right in front of us.
Which is a lot of reading.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
But we are skipping the standard spec sheet read-through today. Our entire mission for this deep dive is to focus exclusively on how this specific model serves as the engine for two massive new architectural capabilities inside Claude Code.
And those are dynamic workflows and a setting called Ultra Code.
Exactly. We need to figure out how these features actually function under the hood, what happens when they fail, and crucially, when you as a founder should authorize your developers to use them versus, you know, when they should just stick to their standard daily tool set.
Yeah, because to really grasp how Claude is now managing these massive parallel teams of AI agents, we do have to look at the engine making it all possible.
Opus 4.8.
Right, Opus 4.8. It fundamentally changes the unit economics of AI reasoning. Like, it is available today for the exact same baseline price as Opus 4.7.
Wait, no price hike at all?
None. That's $5 per million input tokens and $25 per million output tokens.
Okay, that's pretty rare in this space.
It is. But here's the kicker. They have introduced a fast mode that runs at 2.5 times the speed of previous iterations, and simultaneously, it's 3 times cheaper.
Okay, cheaper and faster is always a great headline for a founder's bottom line. Mm. I mean, that's what everyone wants to hear.
Definitely. But beyond the discount, you know, the documentation really heavily emphasizes this jump in agentic coding capabilities.
Right, I saw that. They cite beating OpenAI's GPT 5.5 on something called Terminal Bench 2.1.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
See, but as someone focused on shipping actual features, the moment I see a hyphenated benchmark name, my eyes kind of glaze over. Like, why does Terminal Bench 2.1 actually matter for my developers?
I think that is a highly justified reaction, honestly, considering how gameable most benchmarks are nowadays.
Oh, they're basically all just trained on the test at this point.
Exactly. But Terminal Bench 2.1 isn't a multiple choice trivia test. It is an actual simulation of the environment your developers live in every day.
So like a real IDE?
Pretty much. It drops the AI into a sandboxed command line interface, hands it a completely broken software project, and gives it a goal.
Okay, no hand-holding.
Zero hand-holding. The AI has to independently navigate the directories, read the files, run the test suites, analyze the error logs, and write the fixes all on its own.
Wow.
Yeah. So when Opus 4.8 outperforms GPT 5.5 score, which was 83.4% on this specific test, it means the model is successfully operating as an independent software engineer in a real environment.
Not just acting as an advanced autocomplete.
Exactly. Not just autocomplete.
Okay, so it can operate independently. Hmm. But the Claude Code documentation pairs this with a new feature called adaptive thinking, which, from what I gather, allows developers to tweak an effort slider.
Right. They can set the model's effort to high, IXI, or max.
I got to push back here. Why do I want my engineers fiddling with sliders? Like, if the model is smart, shouldn't it just be smart all the time?
Well, consider the cost of compute, right? In previous model generations, if you turned on extended reasoning, the AI would apply maximum compute power to every single prompt you gave it.
Oh, so it would overthink everything.
Massively. It would consume massive amounts of expensive thinking tokens, analyzing the deep, you know, philosophical implications of a simple CSS color change.
Which is just Burning budget on trivial tasks.
Exactly. It was burning your budget. So adaptive thinking means the model now calibrates its own internal effort based on the complexity of the query.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So by defaulting to high, but giving your developers granular control to push it to high or max for deeply complex architectural problems, you're actually giving them a budget optimization tool.
Right. So they deploy the maximum reasoning power and the maximum token spend only for the problems that actually threaten the roadmap. Okay, that makes perfect sense from a resource allocation perspective. And I guess because Opus 4.8 is now highly reliable at these maximum effort levels without bankrupting the company on easy tasks, it unlocks what Anthropic is calling dynamic workflows.
Yeah, and this feels like the main event of the whole release.
It really does. The documentation implies we are moving from a single AI assistant to, well, a coordinated swarm.
The shift in workflow architecture here is just profound. Like, let's look at how your developers currently use AI. It is a very linear, turn-by-turn process.
Right. You ask a question, it answers.
Yeah. The developer asks the question, the AI writes a function, the developer tests it, finds an error, feeds the error back to the AI, and they just iterate back and forth. It requires constant hand-holding.
Which takes time.
It takes so much time. Dynamic workflows completely dismantle that linearity.
How about so?
When a developer triggers a workflow, Claude does not just start writing application code. Instead, it dynamically writes a custom JavaScript orchestration script in the background.
Wait, it writes its own script to manage itself?
Yes. That script acts as a localized manager, and its sole job is to spin up tens to hundreds of parallel subagents to attack the problem simultaneously.
Okay, if I am a sounder listening to this, I am immediately picturing my lead engineer. Instead of assigning them a junior developer to slowly pair program with, I'm handing my lead engineer a budget to instantly hire 100 temporary senior developers to map out, rewrite, and stress test our entire application all at once.
That is the perfect analogy. The scale of parallel execution is exactly like hiring a massive temporary agency.
But I mean, any founder who has managed large teams knows that adding 100 temporary workers to a project usually creates chaos. Not efficiency.
Oh, for sure. You get a lot of noise.
Right. They might all make the same fundamental error or simply agree with the first solution proposed just to get it done.
Yes. The classic yes man problem. And to prevent that, dynamic workflows are built on adversarial verification.
Adversarial verification, meaning what they're actively trying to prove each other wrong.
Precisely the opposite of a yes man. Claude divides the subagents into distinct roles. One group of agents is tasked with building the solution, rewriting the code, or migrating the framework.
Okay, the builders.
Right. But a completely independent group of adversarial agents is spawned with the explicit goal of destroying that solution.
Oh, wow. So they just attack the code.
They attack it looking for edge cases, security vulnerabilities, or logical flaws. And the crazy part is, the developer doesn't see any of this happening.
It's all under the hood.
Yep. The agents iterate, fight it out, and refine the code in the background. The orchestration script only presents the final converged result to your developer once it has survived that internal gauntlet.
That is wild. Let's run a hypothetical scenario to test the limits of this, though.
Yeah.
Say I am a founder, and my team is migrating a massive 5-year-old monolithic application from an outdated authentication library to a modern standard.
Oof, a classic nightmare scenario.
Yeah, touching hundreds of files. Hearing the phrase hundreds of parallel subagents fighting it out in the background honestly triggers my operational paranoia.
As it should.
Right. What happens if these bots just get stuck in a loop? What if the builder agents keep writing flawed code and the adversarial agents keep rejecting it and they just burn compute for 6 hours straight? Could I wake up to a bankrupting API bill?
Well, that is the exact failure state you should be worried about, but Anthropic thought of this. The runtime environment has strict guardrails to prevent an infinite loop.
Okay, what kind of guardrails?
First, there are concurrency limits. The orchestrator only allows a maximum of 16 agents to run at the exact same millisecond.
16. Got it.
Yeah, which scales based on the local machine's CPU core so it doesn't just crash the developer's laptop.
That's helpful.
Right. But second, and definitely more importantly for your budget, there is a hard ceiling of 1,000 total agents per workflow run.
Oh, I see. So even if they get stuck in a philosophical debate over authentication security, the script physically cuts them off at 1,000 subagents.
Exactly. It hits the cap, pauses the operation, and surfaces the unresolved conflict back to the human developer.
What does this say? Just failed.
No, it provides context. It will essentially say, hey, We tested 300 variations of this auth module, and the adversarial team found a security flaw in every single one. Here is the bottleneck.
Okay, that's actually really useful. It prevents runaway loops while providing a highly detailed diagnostic of why the problem couldn't be solved automatically.
Yeah, it doesn't just leave you in the dark.
Right. But what if the failure isn't the AI's fault? Say my developer kicks off this massive migration on a Friday afternoon, but their laptop battery dies, or they just need to pause it and go home. Are we paying to restart that entire 1,000 agent swarm all over again on Monday morning?
Oh no, the workflows are fully resumable. Yeah, as the custom JavaScript orchestrator manages the swarm, it is constantly caching the state and results of every completed agent.
So it remembers the work.
Exactly. If the developer hits pause or the machine shuts down, nothing is lost. When they open their terminal again, the orchestrator simply loads the cache data of the finished agents and only spins up new compute for the pending tasks.
Okay, I'll admit, all of this orchestration, the custom scripts, the state caching, the sub-agent roles, it sounds incredibly powerful. But it also sounds really complicated to set up.
It could be, yeah.
Right, because if my developers have to spend half their day writing an orchestration manifest just to utilize this swarm, we are losing the entire efficiency gain. They're basically just trading coding bottlenecks for management bottlenecks.
Which brings us perfectly to the third core component of the Opus 4.8 release inside Claude Code, and that's the UltraCode setting.
Ultra code.
Yes, the entire purpose of UltraCode is to remove that management burden from your engineering team entirely.
So let's look at how this is invoked. The documentation shows a developer just typing effort UltraCode into the command line interface. What actually happens the moment they press enter?
By running that command, they're applying a specific persistent formula to the model. UltraCode essentially locks Claude into the highest possible reasoning tier.
That X high effort level we discussed earlier.
Exactly. It locks in X high effort and permanently pairs it with automatic workflow orchestration.
So no manual setup.
None. When a developer has UltraCode turned on, they no longer have to explicitly command Claude to build a dynamic workflow. Claude analyzes the prompt and autonomously decides if the task is complex enough to require a massive parallel swarm.
Wait, so if a developer tells Claude to execute that massive authentication migration we talked about, the model handles the project management unilaterally.
It handles the entire life cycle. Like, a single prompt under UltraCode might autonomously generate three back-to-back dynamic workflows.
Really? All off one prompt?
Yeah. Phase one might spawn 50 agents to simply read the repository and map out every single dependency tied to the old auth library. Then phase two might spawn 200 agents to simultaneously rewrite those files. And phase three might spawn 50 adversarial agents to attempt simulated logins and break the new code.
Okay, I have to throw a massive red flag on the play here.
I thought you might.
We established that Opus 4.8 costs $25 per million output tokens. If Claude is sitting in the terminal, unilaterally deciding to spin up hundreds of agents and basically write blank checks to Anthropic's billing department, how do we actually control this?
That's a huge concern for founders.
It is. If the model decides every task is a massive workflow, our runway is going to just evaporate overnight.
Yeah, the fear of autonomous spending is completely valid. But Anthropic built the UI specifically around transparency and human-in-the-loop authorization to address this exact fear.
Oh, thank goodness. So it doesn't just run wild.
No, Claude Code will not execute a massive workflow silently in the background. Before it spins up a single sub-agent, it flags the run. Depending on the permission mode your organization configures, it will pause and display a pre-flight checklist to the developer.
A pre-flight checklist. I like that. What's on it?
It outlines the scope of the orchestrator script, it estimates the number of phases, and it explicitly asks the developer to approve the workflow before it begins.
Okay, so there is a manual gate before the credit card gets charged. The developer has to look at the plan and say, yes, this migration is actually worth spinning up a swarm.
Exactly. And the transparency continues after execution begins too. The terminal actually transforms into a live dashboard.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, your developer isn't just staring at a blinking cursor hoping it works. They see a live view of the phases, the active agent count, and critically, a real-time counter of the tokens being consumed.
So they can watch the money burn in real time.
Well, yes, but if the developer watches that token counter spinning faster than anticipated, they have absolute control. They just press P to pause the entire swarm or X to trigger an immediate kill switch and terminate the run.
Now that real-time token counter and the hard kill switch are the exact features a founder needs to hear about, it takes the concept from like an academic research paper to a truly deployable business tool.
It gives you the safety net you need.
Yeah, so let's synthesize this into a tactical playbook. On Monday morning, how do my teams actually deploy this? And more importantly, when should they hold back?
Sure. Well, for immediate execution, your teams don't even have to use the full autonomous Ultra Code setting if they want more granular control. They can manually trigger orchestration by simply including the keyword workflow in any standard prompt.
Just the word workflow.
Yep.
Yeah.
Claude spots the keyword and generates the Swarm script just for that isolated request. And Anthropic has also included a suite of bundled workflows for common operations.
Right. The documentation highlights one called Deep Research. How does this utilize the Swarm architecture?
Oh, this is a perfect example of parallel execution applied to data gathering rather than coding.
Hmm.
Say your team needs to audit a competitor's new API documentation or understand a massive shift in a web framework.
A lot of reading, basically.
Exactly. They trigger Deep Research followed by their query. Instead of reading one web page at a time, Claude fans out dozens of subagents to scrape different web sources simultaneously.
Wow.
But the truly fascinating part is the internal voting mechanism.
Wait, AI agents holding a vote? How does that practically work? They aren't expressing opinions, are they?
No, they are establishing consensus on facts. One agent might pull data from an outdated Stack Overflow thread, while another pulls from the official documentation updated yesterday.
So conflicting info.
Right. Before presenting a summary to your developer, the agents cross-check their sources. They submit their conflicting findings to a central evaluating agent within the orchestrator script, which weights the claims based on source authority and timestamps.
So they basically argue about it.
They essentially debate the validity of the information until they reach a verified consensus. The result is a heavily cited, deeply verified research report generated in minutes instead of days.
That is incredible. And to monitor these pre-bundled workflows, or the custom ones, the documentation mentions a specific dashboard command.
Yeah. Developers simply type workflows to enter a dedicated view in their terminal. They can drill down into the logs of individual subagents, monitor the phases, and manage those resumable states we talked about.
Very clean.
It is. But honestly, the most powerful tactical feature in this entire release happens when a workflow finishes.
Okay, what's that?
Let's say Claude generates a custom orchestration script that perfectly executes a highly complex task. The developer can simply press this key.
Saving the workflow. Where does it actually go, though?
It takes the custom JavaScript orchestrator that Claude dynamically generated for that specific run and saves it as a permanent file directly into your repository inside a folder called .claude_workflows.
Oh, wow. This is where the efficiency just multiplies. Because if my lead engineer spends Tuesday dialing in a prompt and Claude generates the perfect 100-agent workflow that, I don't know, reviews pull requests against our company's incredibly specific, highly unusual internal style guide. They just press us.
Just press us.
Now that complex orchestration is codified. Any junior developer on the team can run that exact same massive QA swarm with a single command line trigger later on.
Exactly. You are capturing localized AI management and making it repeatable across the whole organization, which leads directly into the core of your playbook, knowing exactly when to use this technology.
Because if a developer uses a dynamic workflow to fix a typo, we're just burning cash.
Right, burning cash for no reason. Dynamic workflows and the UltraCode setting are engineered for massive, complex, legacy challenges.
It's the structural stuff.
Yeah. You deploy them for codebase-wide bug hunts. You unleash them on profiler audits where an entire microservice needs optimization. You use them for that 500-file framework migration you mentioned earlier.
Things that usually take weeks.
Yes. These are structural projects that traditionally stall roadmaps because they require wits of human planning and execution.
So the explicit do not use list for a founder to communicate to their team is pretty clear, actually.
Yeah.
If a developer is squashing a simple off by one bug, writing a routine unit test for a new function, or just scaffolding a boilerplate component, they must not trigger a workflow.
Exactly. For the daily sprints, they drop the effort slider back down to standard levels, utilize single agents, and protect the compute budget.
That is the optimal deployment strategy. You just match the architectural scale of the AI to the architectural scale of the problem.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, let's summarize the key takeaways of this briefing. Opus 4.8 is the foundational engine. It maintains the current pricing structure, but introduces a fast mode that dramatically improves speed and cost efficiency.
And it fundamentally proves its capability to act as an independent agent through benchmarks like Terminal Bench 2.1.
Right, while utilizing adaptive thinking to manage its own token spend based on task complexity.
Building on that engine, you've got dynamic workflows. They allow your team to move beyond turn-by-turn chat.
Quad writes custom JavaScript to orchestrate swarms of up to 1,000 parallel subagents, utilizing adversarial verification to ensure code quality.
All while bounding the risk with hard concurrency limits and resumable states.
And finally, UltraCode is the autonomous setting that allows Claude to deploy those workflows without manual setup. While the UI provides the pre-flight checks, live token monitoring, and kill switches necessary to keep the founder's budget secure.
It truly is a profound shift in how small engineering teams can approach technical debt.
It redefines what is possible in a single sprint. But before we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you, the founder listening, with a final implication to consider regarding that key.
Oh, right. Pressing A's to save a workflow into your .cloud workflows folder.
Yes. Codifying the orchestration into the repository. Think about the long-term value of that folder. Your developers spend a month building the product, but they also spend time saving these flawless, adversarial workflows that perfectly audit your messy, entirely unique legacy code base.
Workflows that catch every edge case specific to your industry.
Exactly. They understand your proprietary business logic, and they are saved as simple script files right alongside your application code.
They become an integrated part of the code base itself.
So does that .cloud workflows folder eventually become your company's most valuable intellectual property?
That's a huge question.
You aren't just building software anymore. You are essentially downloading a perfect, infinitely repeatable QA and migration team, customized entirely to your business, and storing them in a few kilobytes of code.
Wow. That really reframes the entire concept of what a startup's core IP actually is.
It shifts the focus from the code you write to the automated systems you build to manage that code. And on that thought, we'll leave you to evaluate your technical assets tomorrow morning. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.